Well, good morning. Thank you for coming to this presentation. The title may be a little misleading when I talk about empirical approaches. You'll see that there could be some mechanistic things in there, but also there's also some empiricism, so I didn't quite know what to call this talk, but hopefully you'll see the benefit of maybe how you can apply this in different situations. We've talked a lot about flux. I just want to give a quick definition, and what we're using it here will be mass flux, so it's just the mass movement over unit area per time, and why is that important? It's a very sensitive input when you're trying to estimate air concentration, so obviously you need to know what that source term is, and there are different direct and indirect methods of measuring that. We heard earlier in the session, if you were here, some of the direct methods of how to approximate or estimate flux. There are some indirect methods, and I'll talk about one of these a little bit later. But one of the things that we look at a general flux observation, this is for a soil fumigant that could be similar, and it is similar for other pesticides that I've seen. But general observation trends, it typically starts at zero, meaning right after you applied, you don't see anything, and you get a delay period, and all of a sudden you see a lot of mass coming off, goes through a typical peak, and then it decays off in some fashion. So anyway, when I look at that, and if you had it back in your physical chemistry days and or if you had a chemical kinetics class, you would look at that, and this is where the empiricism comes in. This is just a mass balance equation where you kind of look at where does the mass go. It goes from like a liquid, it volatilizes to a vapor and see it. You know, it fluxes off and then it dissipates in some fashion. So anyway, you can characterize this rather complicated looking flux pattern by two rate coefficients. So can we use this empirical approach across, you know, a wide range of conditions? And this is just an example of multiple field trials for soil fumigant at various locations in the U.S. And you see, you always see the similar trend, and what I've got pictured here are the best fit empirical approaches using those kinetic mass balances. So I have two parameters characterizing this. One of the things when you got this approximation by chemical kinetics, now you can start using traditional approaches used in chemical kinetics, like how does those rate coefficients vary with temperature. So this is a standard Arrhenius type estimates on that. But typically, so these rate constants are temperature dependent. Okay, so we, unfortunately, there's a lot of regions around the country where they don't measure soil temperatures, but you do always have access to air temperatures. So we need like a quick and dirty way if we can estimate soil temperatures from air temperatures, and then we can use that in this Arrhenius expression to update those rate constants. So anyway, you can use the standard equations for temperature in soil. Now, what I did here was just looked at a daily model prism to kind of get estimates on what some of these delays are and stuff. So anyway, you can, what it comes down to is you can very easily come up with simple correlations where you can use air temperatures to calculate what the surface soil temperature would be. And then, of course, once you know the surface soil temperature, then you can propagate it down using a normal energy balance equation, the conduction into the soil. So when we do that, when I update those rate constants now based on the air temperatures for, this is just an example for a specific field trial, you can see the comparison between a direct method, an aerodynamic flux method that we heard earlier to quantify the field flux versus this purely empirical approach where I just parameterized it by two coefficients and then updated those two coefficients based on air temperatures to estimate the soil temperatures, okay? You see it does, I think, a really tremendous job of mimicking what you see from the aerodynamic flux method. So that's well and dandy, but you still have these two unknown coefficients, okay? So if you don't know those, then you can't really use this method unless you have, you know, field observations where you use a conventional method to estimate that. However, you can estimate these from soil physics models, and what we've done, I'm sure other people have or can do very easily. I give an example of chain 2D. So in that case, you would parameterize the model based on your soil properties, your physical chemical properties of the molecule you're interested in, have it predict the flux patterns, and then you could fit those flux predictions and get those two rate constants that you need, and then you can update those with this empirical method. Okay, now I'm going to shift gears and talk about another empirical method I kind of hinted at, the indirect way of calculating volatile fluxes from fields. And that indirect way is you don't measure it directly. What you do is you measure air concentration surrounding your field, and based on those air concentrations, you infer what the volatility flux had to be to give you those air concentrations. So you couple an air dispersion model in with this methodology. And there is a proposed way of doing this from Ross et al., where they use the ISCST3 air dispersion model. You run it with a unit flux profile, and you see that equation on the top, and then you compare it to what your measured air concentrations would be. So anyway, that if you just draw a linear line through your data, what you measured versus what you estimated from the unit flux profile, you would get a slope, and you would just update your flux based on that slope at every time step. Okay, our experiences with that have been actually pretty good to poor. So sometimes you're lucky, sometimes you're not so lucky. So there really needs to be a better way to do that. So I'm going to talk about what I feel is a better way of doing it. I'm going to give an example of some pesticide field trials using a wide range of different pesticides, some from very highly volatile soil fumigant to more along the range of like herbicides, typical herbicides. So these field trials, they measured surrounding air, they made an application, they measured surrounding air concentrations around that field, and now it's just a matter of, and then they measured the average air concentration over 6-hour intervals, and then at nighttime they went 12 hours, so 6-6-12, 6-6-12, most likely on that. So this new approach I'm going to talk about uses an optimization procedure with your air dispersion model. I don't really need to go into details on this, but these simplexes, those are just what you use in the optimization procedure, and the vertices on the simplex are typically you have one more vertice than you have like your parameters that you're changing. So I'll give an example on the right-hand side. If that's like a topographic map where you've got XY locations and then the contour is like the depth, and I want to find the lowest place on that response surface, and I start like at the outer edge, I've got two parameters that I'm varying. So I have a three vertex simplex, a triangle. I run the model, I get those 3 points on the response curve, and I look at them. If I'm trying to minimize a function, I want to get to that lowest level, I say which one of those three vertices is the lowest. And so I know the lowest, the second lowest, and then the highest. And I just can invert or translate that. And you see how I can kind of do that and march it down. So now that when I translate it or rotate it in, I still have 2 points on the response surface that are identical as I measured it in the last iteration, so I only have to run the model again to get that new point, and et cetera. You can kind of do that until you march down and you get to this this minimal. So it's kind of a way of like steepest descent, and this is a very popular optimization routine that's been around for, I don't know, 35 years. And the reason it's been around that long is because it works and it's very robust, so you can use it on a lot of different types of models that are difficult to use other procedures on. Okay, does it work? This is just an example of the BCM, that's the back calculation method, the C and the R, that's different versions of the optimization, what I call coarse and refined. Typically, when you run a back calculation method, you run it over the time step of your observation. So in the example that I'm giving, we had like a 6-hour observation window, so you'd run a model on a 6-hour time step. Okay, you don't have to do that. Obviously, you can run the model on as coarse or as refined as a time step as possible. So that's the advantage of this particular method. This just gives you an indication of how well it works. This is a comparison of predicted versus observed concentrations. And so the line fit through that data. Obviously, you want everything on a 45-degree line. The R-squared, that's just the R-squared for the line fit through the data. But just to point out, you can see as we go from the original back calculation method to the more refined back calculation, I call a BBCM, better back calculation method, using the optimization routine. So instead of running the model one time, you might run the model hundreds of times to fully characterize that response surface as you're traveling down to get to your optimal solution. But you can see for all these different ranges of pesticides from high to ultra low, you see as we go from the original back calculation method to the refined method, our R squareds increase. So it's doing a much better job than the traditional way of back calculating fluxes from field observations. But one of the advantages is, I kind of hinted at it, the traditional way you use more coarse time steps governed by your sampling of your field trial. This case here, you can refine it now based on the time steps of whatever you think is of interest. The model that I used here, it ran on an hourly time step, so I could go down to an hourly basis. So you see the difference, and even though we have similar total mass, you can see we now come down to the hour that mass came off. You get a little more accurate predictions, like what you would say, you would assume is happening. So that's a good thing from an acute standpoint. And obviously, if you're a person living in a house nearby, you really want to know what that peak exposure is versus how it spread out, if it did spread out over, you know, a six-hour interval, for example. Okay. Conclusions, the kinetic approximations, they do a surprisingly good job. If you had no other knowledge, you can use a model to estimate what the volatility is, use this kinetic approach, and get pretty good in the ballpark what you would expect to see under field conditions. Talked about the better back calculation that's proposed, where you use multiple iterations of an air dispersion model and an optimization procedure, and it works. It works better than the conventional method. So if you have limited field trials and that's how you're going to estimate your flux, obviously you want to get it as close to reality as possible, so you would use one of these more refined methods like what I'm proposing here. And that's what I had. Thank you for your time. Well, it wouldn't. The only way it could be generalized would be through either lots of field trials where you fit it. You know, I showed a handful of them. Those are all done under different conditions, so you can kind of maybe map out what it could look like, and you can fill in the gaps with like a soil physics model where you would specifically say, my injection depth is X, this is the weather for this given region. You know, so that, in essence, would give you closer refinement on what those two rate constants could be.
So there are maybe ways to predict this constant based on some of the
That's correct. I mean, obviously, you want to use the best knowledge you have available. It might be a compilation of your field information, you know, maybe some numerical simulations, et cetera. Ideally, you don't want it under those exact conditions that you're trying to predict, but that's not always a reality. So.
Yeah, Steve, quick question. Do you have any sense for how the comparison between your improved back calculation method would be if you compared it to the Ross method?
Yeah, because I've actually incorporated both ISCST and CalPUF in this better back calculation method, and it, you know, if it comes down to a lot of times under, you know, comp conditions where we know like one model is going to do a little better than another, we got like pure diffusion going on, then it does make a little bit of difference in terms of which model that you use. Yeah, but you saw I showed like the different ranges of volatility of the herbicides or the pesticides. Any model is going to work really well for a highly volatile compound, where you start getting limitations, where you're getting close to the detection limits and stuff, and that's where a model like CalPUF probably would be a better choice.
Thank you.